Hey everybody, welcome back to Check the Gate AFI Deep Dive. I'm Boyd, and as always, I'm joined with Brandon.
Hello.
And Michael.
Hello, Boyd.
And today, Michael, it's all about you, because this is a movie that you chose. We are doing the 1996 film Sleepers, a film about after a prank goes disastrously wrong, a group of boys are sent to a detention center where they are brutalized. 13 years later, an unexpected random encounter with a former guard gives them a chance for revenge. Take us through this a bit, Michael. Obviously, since this was a USA pick, I think this was like the first one you chose too. What about this film was so close to your mind that you wanted us to experience it?
I thought you were going to say so close to your heart. And I was like, I wouldn't go that far. I remember seeing this when I was young, maybe, 12-ish. And I remember seeing oh shit, this is messed up. But it kind of it was always stuck in my mind as I was like, oh, you know, that stuff never happens at places like that. And then it just kind of realized or showed me that that shit does happen, and sometimes the world's kind of fucked up, and I don't know why. Yeah. That's kind of a brief synopsis on why it stuck in my head all this time, but it was a good rewatch, though.
Yeah, I'd seen it.
So you wanted to share your trauma amongst the group here?
Yeah, I figured, you guys could appreciate it, I guess. We've watched some heavy movies over the years.
You know, being a former Catholic altar boy myself, yes.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe subconsciously I needed to make that connection.
You're like, yeah, let's do it.
Well, this time it's not the church. The church is actually the good guys, if you can believe it.
Right.
Which is crazy because when you first meet, obviously, Robert De Niro, you think that he's going to be like the loose
scum
cannon. But he's just he's the benevolent being in this movie.
I wrote in my notes that he's the one beacon of light.
Yeah.
the first time I had seen it, I thought he was going to go up and testify, but do the priestly thing and tell the truth.
Yeah.
Mild spoiler for the end of the movie, but so this whole, the whole movie is kind of ramping up to his decision. I feel like with his decision, the court case probably would have been figured out a lot quicker, but because it's a movie, you're ramping to this thing. I honestly thought that he was just going to go up there and was like, no, I wasn't with him.
I almost was just like, yeah, and then, but yeah, we'll get there when we get there.
Yeah. And Brandon, you had never seen this, right?
Correct.
Oh. I'd never seen this movie on TV, but it was always, the whole time I was rewatching it, it reminded me a lot of A Time to Kill. I don't know if you guys have seen that, the McConaughey. It's kind of the same thing. When is it justified to kill somebody kind of thing, and then a court case trying to get the person we all know murdered somebody off. To the point where when I was Googling Sleepers, one of the first thing that pops up was Sleepers versus A Time to Kill. I was like, okay, so it's not just me. This is an entire genre. And I guess there's another film called Eye to Eye that I've never seen, but I guess it's kind of in the same ballpark. A murder happens, whether it was justified or not, and then a court case, the courtroom drama. I also remember this movie starting with the killings. And then I was surprised to find out that you are actually with the boys for an entire hour.
Yeah.
Before, not necessarily, it's not a twist, but it's definitely the catalyst, the turning point in the film that drives the rest of the plot.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You want to dive into this bad boy?
Let's do it.
Get a little sleepy. Like I said, this is a 1996 film. The top three films in 1996 are number three, Mission Impossible, the foist one. Number two, Twister, the first one. And number one, Independence Day, the first one.
Ooh. What a... This that explains why I didn't see this movie.
Because they're
that's a solid lineup right there that came out.
Yeah, the summer of '96, baby.
I think it just got lost in the sauce.
Yeah, I mean, you would have been what, 9 when this movie came out? 10,
for sure.
Yeah,
80. Well,
96.
10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was 3.
It was the first movie he saw in theaters too.
So. Yeah, me and my mama.
A ticket cost in 1996, $4.42, which is equivalent to $8.83 our money. The budget for the film was $44 million, which is equivalent to $87.9 million. And the box office was $165.6 million, which is equivalent to $330.9 million. So a nice, robust earning. The film was nominated for 1 Academy Award at 1-0. It lost for Best Music / Score for the John Williams. I was surprised that it was him, too, when you see his name pop up in the credits, because it doesn't sound anything like... Usually he does, like, all the...
No.
A lot of his scores, I'm not saying they're all the same, but they do sound quite similar.
They all have the same theme. They've always got the cello, and they've always got the horns, you know.
And this movie does do a lot more, like, pop culture... 60s music, you know, obviously with the Frankie Valli, with what the boys do. But this movie's also based on a book that I had a lot of the trivia I had seen about this movie are almost all about the book. The author claiming that this is a true story and that Jason Patrick is supposed to be the author. You know, he goes by Shakes, but I guess it's, you know, Lorenzo Caricetta, I believe is his name, said he changed names and detention centers, you know, for legal issues, but it has since come out that he made the whole thing up and just said it happened to him in real life. So this book had like a bunch of controversy, and then the movie came out like a year later. There's like court cases where the city of, like, state of New York was like, we have no court cases that make all his friends growing up were like, this never happened to him.
Damn.
So a lot of people were just like, oh, so you're just, you wrote some
a good storyteller.
You wrote something heavy and then you said, oh no, this is me. It happened to me. That's why we never, like, Jason Patrick never really tells us what happens to him, because he's supposed to be the author / obviously he's the narrator of the film, but he's in quotes the author of the book too. And that's again why it's all, for the most part, his POV. You know, even as a young kid, we only really see his home life. We see that a young Tommy is getting beaten up by his stepdad, but we never actually see that. We see how violent Shakes' dad is to his mom. And then when he leaves the detention center, you know, we don't see what happens to the boys again until, you know, that's when we jump to 1981. So that's why it's all relatively told through his perspective. This movie does, I do love those 60s vibes though, like the running the muck with your friends, playing stickball with the fellas.
Yeah.
You know, in Hell's Kitchen, New York, where there's like slight, not even slight, there's mob corruption, but like the mobsters seem like super chill, like, hey, you're part of the neighborhood.
Hey, welcome.
They're for the people.
Like, Shakes' dad is like telling the kids, like, by the way, like Bruno Kirby, his dad looks like he's doing like an Ed Norton cosplay. looks so much like Ed Norton in this film. You know, he's telling them about how, you know, brutal, you know, King Benny is. And then they're like, oh, I'm going to go work for that guy.
He pays all right though.
Yeah. What, $25?
Yeah.
For 45 minutes worth of work? I should have looked up what $25 in 1968 was. Bear with me. $225.
Holy shit. That's a good, that's a good haul.
Yeah. No dental, though, unfortunately.
Mm.
That's why King Benny's missing his front teeth. you know... We're introduced to Father Bobby, who is played by Robert De Niro. Like we said, he's obviously a priest, he's like the one, you know, like I'd already said, like the beacon of light in these boys' life. They're altar boys. Two of the four boys actually have like an interest in going into the priesthood. They're a bunch of pranksters. They like fucking with the nuns, you know, hiding in confessional booths and hearing everybody's deep dark secrets, and then they're just like, "Oh, shouldn't have done that."
Whoops.
And you know, kind of like what we were saying, like with how good De Niro is with these boys, I kept anticipating the turn at the end, and so it was just, it was like the one nice thing about this film, especially because like this movie has, but also doesn't have a happy ending, because it's like while we're all hanging out together one last time, it then is undercut with, and then they all died.
Yeah, it's like, oh, look at this, and then it's like, so and so died of a drug overdose. So and so didn't make it to 30. So it's just like, oh, all right, I'll just focus on this little video of them having fun right now,
drinking and smoking.
Yeah,
and they got like 18 candles on the table in front of them. like I said, they're little pranksters. They have this really great idea in the summer of 1967, which they said is the event that changed their lives forever. Have this idea that they're going to get a hot dog from a hot dog vendor. When he hands it to him, he's going to take off running, and the vendor can either take his 15-cent loss on a hot dog or chase after him. And then if he does, the other three boys will come up and eat his hot dogs. Raw dog is dogs. Glizzies.
With his dogs. Glizzies.
That ends up what's happening. He takes off running. He says he runs for like 10 blocks, and the vendor was still on his heels. He goes, he could have gone 15 minutes on hate alone. the three guys back at the... Brad Renfro, by the way. R.I.P. Brad Renfro. Remember when he was in everything in the 90s?
Yeah.
Man. It's Huckleberry Finn from my childhood.
Yep.
Tom and Huck. They decide that they're going to steal the hot dog cart, because wouldn't it be funny if when he gets back his cart is missing? Shakes runs hilarious. Back to them, says he's still chasing me, so they have the idea that they're going to try to balance the hot dog booth, vendor booth, which they've already stated is heavier than it looks. They're going to try to balance it at the top of a subway stair rail, that way when he comes up he'll grab it, and once he grabs the cart they can run away and they'll be fine. Obviously, the cart is way too heavy, and it goes careening down those staircase, and it lands into an innocent bystander at the very bottom. And I actually remembered him dying. I thought they truly did kill him. And even, you know, young Michael Brad Renfro is the one who said, I think we just killed a man. We find out that he is luckily alive and trying to recover in a hospital, and the boys are charged with reckless endangerment. Shakes gets a lighter sentence because he was they said he wasn't there when they put, but he was one of the guys who put the hot dog cart on the staircase. They just stole it while he was gone. So he gets a lighter sentence because he didn't initiate it, of 6 months to 1 year at Wilkinson's Detention Center for Boys. And then the other three guys get anywhere from 1 to 1.5 years. And that not even Father Bobby's influence can help smooth things over, solve things. He can't vouch for them. They're going to detention center. We find out that Robert De Niro has also, when he was a ruffian, his when he was younger too, and that he had actually stayed at Wilkinson's also. Then this movie takes a turn for the worse. We meet Sean Noakes, a prison guard, played by Kevin Bacon in his creepiest Kevin Bacon face. Whistling down,
very creepy.
Whistling down the hallway, you know, swirling his baton, goes to Shakes' room and tells him to undress completely. Has him stripped down naked. He's leering at him while he's smoking that cigarette. And then once he's naked, tells him to get back, get dressed, and then clearly just goes to the next room over. and we cut to that. So like, this is night one. We're in for it. Brandon, you said you'd never seen it. Did you know anything about this movie at all?
No.
No.
So not a single thing.
So like the next 30 minutes of this film, like are fucking heavy.
Yeah.
And
very.
I remember that they don't show, obviously they're not showing anything. It's all more, I mean,
you can draw your own conclusions.
Yeah. What's left to your imagination is almost worse.
Yeah.
But I didn't remember it being for that long and that intense, especially with those flashbacks, because those flashbacks are almost worse than when they're actually there. Just a lot of fill in your own blanks. They, the four guards that are on their floor, Noakes, Ferguson, Styler, and Addison, routinely take the boys. We could presume it happened to more than just the four, the core four. Obviously, other of the other boys are getting beaten, but we can presume this is happening pretty much on this floor. To all the boys on that floor. They're routinely taken down to the basement, beaten, tortured, and raped. Yeah. It's not a fun time being had. And it's relenting. I don't mean to beat the same drum, but it's just like there is literally never a moment where, I mean, even when you do think you have that moment of reprieve, they're doing the, you know, we see one of the boys in solitary confinement, his face is beat to a bloody pulp, you know, and then he does like that little flashback. We get that foggy blue lens where, you know, they're doing like a longest yard football game, you know, inmates versus guards kind of thing. It's just a friendly game of two-hand touch. Shakes and the boys see a kid named Rizzo, a black kid, super athletic. They convince him, join the football team, we'll embarrass the guards, we'll finally have that moment where in your face, you know, kind of thing, to which they do. And like, and you get like the every game of two-hand touch ever where it starts as two-hand touch and then it becomes full tackle rugby. People doing like these crazy flips in the air, slamming in the mud, slow motion, hand in the air celebrations in slow motion. The guards lose. You know, we get, you know, Rizzo, you know, going up to Noakes saying, hey, good game, Noakes, you know, kind of thing. And then we cut to them in solitary, beat to a pulp, because obviously the guards took their aggression out on them. And when Shakes comes out of solitary, he's in the infirmary with the other boys. Their faces all bruised and beaten. And Brad Renfro lets us know that Rizzo was literally beaten to death. He has died. We get Father Bobby routinely come and try to visit. You know, Kevin Bacon obviously tells him every time, you know, keep your fucking mouth shut or it's going to get even worse for you. No one's going to believe you kind of thing. To the point where Shakes feels like like all four of the boys don't want this out, to the point where they actually ask Father Bobby to stop coming because it's just too hard. It doesn't seem like any of their parents come anymore. They make a comment about how so-and-so's parents never came. You know, Tommy's mom came like once a month for a couple times. Michael didn't have anybody come, but I routinely had Father Bobby showing once every week or so. And then it just got too much for him. And that's when, you know, he lets him know that Father Bobby lets him know, I was here too. You know, it don't be too tough for this place. Like it's, he sends him off. And then we get that scene where it clearly Shakes is going home. It's been a year. You know, they even say like, we're not, it's not 1 year to a year and a half for us. It'll be a year and a half to the hour, to the minute. Like, they're not going to let us go. They make that comment about how Noakes tore up, you know, the letter from the warden saying that Shakes gets to go home. And that last night, they have a, as they put it, a going away party for him. where we get that really harrowing visual of them going down that long hallway for probably the 365th time, you know, faces completely zapped of all innocence, especially the two smaller boys, you know, John and Tommy are clearly, you know, forever fucked up from this. And they get another 6 months of it. Shakes gets to leave, but these guys get another 6 months. Thankfully, we cut to 1981. That's the first hour of this movie. Is like I said, I remember it being like 5-10 minutes and it ended up being like 30-45.
What makes that last scene so much worse is, like, as they're all walking down the hallway, they're just like, oh, yeah, well, they're, like, making small talk and stuff. Yeah. They're just like, oh, if he's going to tell you to work those hours, like, I'll tell him I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the guards.
I put in for overtime. You know, I said, I ain't missing this for, you know, he's like, oh, you getting paid overtime? He's like, I come in 3 hours every morning, and I don't get paid shit. You know, yeah, just it's another day at the office for these guys. Mm-hmm. And it punctuates it even more in the next scene where now an adult John and Tommy come walking into a bar. They're clearly locals, you know, they frequent this bar enough to where they can tell the bartender, hey, send those two guys over there talking politics at our bar. They either need to change political parties or change the conversation, if you catch my drift. So, you know, the guys oblige, you know, they get, you know, and then that's when John sees Kevin Bacon in the corner, a disheveled looking Kevin Bacon, eating. He can't really tell if it's him, but so he goes to the bathroom, verifies it's him, goes back to Tommy, lets him know, and then you get that scene where they're just cocking their guns. We're told at the beginning that these two guys are the founding members of the West Side Boys. Little John started the East Side Boys. These two guys started the West Side Boys. They go up to him. Kevin Bacon can't place him. They sit down at this booth and, you know, they confront him, you know, saying, you know, it's John and Tommy. And then to what you were saying, like how he goes, oh, how you guys been? It's been a long time. You know, like nothing bad happened. As he says, when they're like, we're gonna watch you die. We're gonna fucking kill you. And he's like, well, I was just making you tough. You know? Like that whole thing of him just being like, just casually going back to eating. Just being like, oh, how you been? It's been a long time. Oh, yeah. What you guys been up to? Kind of thing. That was like the punctuation mark on the, I regret nothing. I don't care.
Now you must die.
And they really take their time with it. Shoot him in the groin, shoot him in the leg, shoot him in the arm, but with like 20 seconds in between each shot till they finally shoot him in the head. You see the two patrons at the in the booth next to him. You know, they're screaming, they're looking away, they're screaming. They go out, and I really liked the touch of them. They go to hand the money to the bartender. Hey, we should have got those sandwiches to go. I like how the bartender doesn't really know what's happening. He just hears gunshots, and he's got money in his hand, like, fanned out, like it's supposed to be a robbery. Like, it's another day at the office for him as well. There's gunshots. I don't know if you noticed that at all, but that second watch I did yesterday, I noticed he had money fanned out in his hand as if they shot somebody and were coming to rob him. So he was just going to hand over money.
Yeah.
But they actually gave him money, left money on the counter for him. We get a little bit of narration that the two men have pled not guilty, and that's when we meet Jason Patrick, who is the adult Shakes, who works for the New York Times. He's a newspaperman. And Brad Pitt is the assistant DA who voluntarily took this case. And everybody in Hell's Kitchen thinks he's a traitor because he is essentially the person who's going to try to put these boys in jail. Not only his friends, but also fellow Hell's Kitchen neighborhood kids. That's when Brad Pitt meets up with Jason Patrick and puts this plan in motion where he says, you know, he essentially says the only reason why I got into law was to put these four men in jail and bring down Wilkinson's detention center. He said, it's not how I intended this to start, but John and Tommy started it, so now we have to pivot. Like, he's clearly been thinking about this forever. He has these stacks of files on all four of the guards, and he has a plan to essentially sabotage his own career to get not only John and Tommy off, but ruin the lives of the men who ruined theirs. A lot of moving parts. You know, we kind of get the Ocean's 11 montage of the things we need. We're going to need King Benny. He runs the streets. He's got to keep Hell's Kitchen quiet. He's got to let them know, please feel free to berate and yell at Brad Pitt. We have to make it look like he's the bad guy. But nobody can touch him, can't kill him. No death order can be sent until King Benny gives the words. It's all underground. You know, that's when they drop the title of the name, the Sleepers, which is the code word for juvenile detention center kids who've been there longer than 9 months. Brad Pitt has King Benny enlist, like, Dustin Hoffman, who's like a drunken slob, like, terrible bumble.
Love Dustin Hoffman in this.
He's doing, like, the most Dustin Hoffman. Like,
the most Dustin Hoffman mumble of all time.
Like, right up there with Dick Tracy when he mumbles.
Yeah.
The whole time, that's all I could think was him and Dick Tracy.
The best part of him is, like, the legal pad. And you can tell off his lines.
Blatantly reading the script. Yeah.
No, when he's like, behind Brad Pitt and he's, like, flipping through his notebook and he just, like, keeps flipping and keeps flipping and keeps flipping. And Brad Pitt's like, dude, I am going to murder you. Like, what time? It's bugging him.
What time did you eat lunch? What time did you... And then he, like, trips over the desk a little bit, like, hits his knee.
Yeah, he runs into it. Yeah.
Such a good job.
He was great.
He's just like, so how many glasses of wine do you have with lunch? So it's one, and then you had two. What?
Is that a typical lunch for you?
Yeah.
The alcoholic who's calling the other alcoholic.
The martini and four glasses of wine, and then two.
He's like, is that a typical lunch for you?
Yeah. And she's like, excuse me?
Did you see or did you glance? Glanced.
He's like making a point, but like you don't realize he's actually making a point.
Yeah, you've been got by Dustin Hoffman.
And you know, to a degree, it's more Brad Pitt just because he's literally, you see him, you even in that montage where he was like, we're going to get this drunk buffoon. He's like, and I'm going to give him, King Benny tells him, he's like, you're going to have all the questions and you're going to have all the answers. You know, and we see Brad Pitt typing it on the, you know, typewriter, and he's typing, how much did you have to drink at lunch? Like, that's what he's typing. So 10 minutes later, when he's finally asking those questions, you're like, oh, okay.
He does have a point.
Yeah. Jason Patrick meets up with Carol, who was also another young friend they had. She's like a social worker. And he's like, it was a little vague on why he was there for like files. Like, do you want the files? But I didn't know if that was because they were kind of like flirting with each other a little bit. It didn't seem like she ever gave him any information or anything because they still had Brad Pitt's fat stack of files on all three of the other guys, all the other guards. They get King Benny to threaten two of the witnesses, the two guys talking politics, so they're not going to testify. We just have to worry about the two people in the booth who were, you know, 5 feet away from the murder when it happened. We kind of get like progressive all in a row, bing, bang, boom. We get the scene where, you know, they're questioning the woman whether she had enough to drink or whether she had too much to drink, I should say. And we do see, by the way, when they shoot that first shot, it cuts to them at the booth and she turns away completely.
Yep. Yeah.
So she didn't look at anything that whole time. Not that that matters. I just
no. But it was good. Good camera or good editing, you know.
Yeah. To
foreshadow
that little nugget. Yeah. and then we get like consistently. I'm gonna go find a young, hungry detective who wants to work his way up in the, you know, in the police department. So Jason Patrick gives him a big old fat stack of information on one of the guards, Styler. He's a corrupt cop. He's throwing druggies, drug dealers away, but he's just taking their stash and their money, selling their stash, getting the more money, you know. So he's, and then on top of that, there was a murder that they couldn't place. Well, here's the gun. Here's the shells. And they have his fingerprints on both of them. So we're taking care of that guy right off the bat. We find out that he arrests him right away. It didn't take long. He jumps right on it. Cut to King Benny finding out that Addison, who is another police officer who's been like got his shit in King Benny's business, decides what he's going to do. He finds out that he has $8,000 worth of debt, buys all of his debt so that he now owes King Benny, Addison, the other guard. Then he goes, he finds out that Rizzo, the kid who was killed at the detention center, his brother is also like a mob boss in and of itself, like a different sect. You know, they don't really get into it, just that they've known each other for a long time. Essentially says, you're going to give me $8,000 in cash, and you're essentially going to buy Addison's debt. Oh, by the way, he killed your brother. Like, oh, well,
bye.
Here's $8,000 here. And then knowing that Addison would never be able to pay that off, you know, we cut to them at the airport, like that airfield at night. His face has been beaten to a pulp. And it was, honestly, it's like really good filmmaking where you hear the plane go over and then they just like blow him away with like 15 shots to the chest, but you can't hear the gunshots at all because you just have the sound of the jet turbine. So we've dispatched two guards like immediately. And then they have this plan to get Ferguson on the stand. He's the only one that doesn't have any, you know, dirt that they can tweak. Use against him in a way to either arrest or kill. They put him on the stand, you know, and Brad Pitt essentially is just like, you good friends with Sean Noakes. We find out also that he's like a social worker, but he's also like a Sunday school teacher. So, like, there's also that in there, too. So, he's, like, consistently around children. So, that has always been just weighing in the back of your mind while you're watching this. Obviously, he's up on the stand. Jason Patrick doesn't even want to look at him, because why would you? We got John and Tommy sitting at the desk looking, seeing who it is. And they're furious. Because, again, I don't know why. And this is just kind of like an off topic, but on topic. I don't know why they never told them what was happening. Would it matter if John and Tommy knew that they were trying to do, like that Michael was actually working with them, not against them?
That's a good point. I guess I never thought about that.
I felt like this whole time, obviously it's a book. Has to, you know, it's a movie. You gotta make a. If you streamline things, it's not, you know, thrilling. Anticipating, you're not ramping up to what Robert De Niro's gonna do at the end, you know, because they do go to De Niro and are like, "Hey, we need you to you gotta perjure yourself. Say you were with them." You know, Jason Patrick tells him, like in that really emotional montage scene where he's just kind of at the house talking and talking about all of the things that they endured for a year, year and a half, and why they felt like they could never go to him about it, but they're going to him now, you know, to help them out. So I feel like if De Niro testifies earlier, it gets thrown out, obviously, because he straight up says, they were with me, you know, yada, yada, question a priest, I dare you, kind of thing. I didn't understand why everything had to be so secretive.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, I got nothing else to add on that, but like, it's a good point. Like, why you would think they would want to be, you would want to tune them in, not just be like, whoa, 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 what are you doing? You know?
Yeah, I guess.
Maybe they didn't. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good point.
I understand at the beginning when they said we need as few people that know what's happening as possible. Hell's Kitchen is a tight-knit neighborhood, and they look out for each other. But obviously, the more people know, the more chance that it gets out.
News slips.
So, we don't really get much outside of that. What happened at Wilkinson's made John and Tommy the people that they were. Obviously, they didn't feel like they could keep it to themselves. I guess is the whole point of why they didn't know. It just, I don't know. That was always the one thing that didn't make sense story-wise for me. Because they consistently want, they never actually come out and say that they were molested. Like, that was the whole point of the trial, was that they were going to get Ferguson to rat on himself. Rather than be like, and you did it to those two boys too, didn't you? They never said that. They just said it happened at Wilkinson's, and I was there and I witnessed it. So like, in the eyes of the court, that never, these two boys are, untouched by these guys. But that we just tricked this guy into ratting on himself, which is what happens. Was there beatings at Wilkinson's? Defined beatings, hit with a fist, a baton. It happened every once in a while. Was there torture? Oh, defined torture. Brutalizing children, putting cigarette butts out on kids' skin. Yeah, I guess that happened too. Can you who did the? I can't remember everyone's name. I just remember one name. Okay, and then there is that moment where you can literally see the light bulb click in Ferguson's head on the stand, where he then we cinematically see that it's the two boys sitting at the desk. It's no longer, the adult versions, it's the children, and you can see that he has figured out that he has been gotten and that those are the two boys, and that, he immediately starts breaking down, confesses to everything. Noakes was part of this, I was there. I do think it's weird that they just let him go. Like, obviously
And they're like, but we'll want to have a word with you after this kind of
obviously
thing.
the judge says don't go far from home
Yeah.
because people are going to want to talk to you. I feel like he should have just been arrested right there on the spot,
Yeah, seriously.
which is what I was expecting. And then they're like, okay, you're dismissed. And the judge is like, but don't go far. Well, and then, define far, I guess.
But at the end, doesn't Brad Pitt say like something about like going back after him? Like he was like collecting, he's got to get his, I thought I can't remember, something about like him collecting the information to go back after Ferguson.
Obviously there's going to be a whole nother trial with
Yeah.
Ferguson. We are left to that's the one thing that, there's no on-screen resolution. Obviously, we know that he just confessed to a lot of terrible, heinous acts, but
Yeah.
because we don't see him arrested, we're just left to assume that that loose end gets tied up after this case. It's a whole separate case. They're not there to try anybody for,
He'll have his
terror.
own day in court.
Yeah, they're there for a murder trial, so that's a whole separate thing. But Brad Pitt, as we find out at the end, retires. He turns into, so he's not even part of that trial.
Yeah.
But but Brad Pitt does. Oh, he does like that really, like goofy, dead face Brad. Oh, I guess I called the wrong character witness, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like I've been saying, this whole movie has now been ramping up to whether Father Bobby is going to testify or not. Everyone on in Hell's Kitchen, they see Father Bobby as he's going to court. They're all like, "We good? We good?" And he just gives that De Niro wink. By the way, he's only 53. He looks great in this movie.
Yeah.
It looks like he's like 40.
I was saying this to Cassie. I was like, I wonder when did he just start swelling up and like aging? Because like he's
like within the last like 5 years, I swear. Cause
like he's still,
you think about like Meet the Parents and the Fockers. He looks, he looks the same as he did in this movie. Like,
yeah.
And then you jump like 5 more years and he looks exactly the same that he did in Sleepers. Yeah. You're like, this guy doesn't age. And then only in like the last 3 years, he just kind of like,
yeah. Bad grandpa that, took when it that, out of him.
Yeah.
Bad grandpa. Or that, I forgot about that
what's
movie.
That other, what was that movie? The Netflix movie that he was in. It was COVID. Oh. It was the big one.
The Irishman?
Like, the Irishman. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. It was like right then he like started to show his age.
The movie that had like the bad face de-aging because they were supposed to be like in their 20s, but they hired an 80-year-old Robert De Niro, we've talked about that multiple times with, you know, Raging Bull and Goodfellas, both De Niro Scorsese films where they're supposed to, you know, be 20, 25. And Raging Bull, he's supposed to be 18, we talked about.
Yeah.
But he's called in to the stand. You know, we get that really great scene because, again, as an audience, we don't know what's going to happen. You know, and he's talked last we spoke to him, he was with Jason Patrick, and he said, I need to pray on it, and I hope I make the right decision. And, you know, and Jason Patrick said, you know, what the decision you make will be the right one, regardless of which decision you go with. You know, that, you know, great scene where, like, almost the sound is, like, completely gone as, you know, he swears on the Bible. Sits down. Hoffman asks him where he was the night of the murder. We get by the way, isn't this like the Celtics-Knicks basketball game? Isn't that like what the Menendez brothers were at, said they were at when they were actually killed? Because he's on that basketball card of the guy for the Knicks. Like that was their alibi, but they actually just left the game early and then went and killed their parents.
Was it a Knicks Celtics game or was it Knicks Bulls? I can't remember.
I don't. I just when he said, you know, I was at the Garden watching not the Garden, but I guess the Garden. Yeah, watching the Knicks Garden. Celtics. Yeah, who won? Is like unfortunately the Celtics with too much. You know, Robert Parrish, even though it was All Saints Day kind of thing.
That was good little quip.
Was anybody there with you? Yes. The defendants, John and Tommy, were there. What? you see that look on both John and Tommy's face? Like, oh, yeah, we were there.
Yeah, we were there. I was there.
Yeah, I remember. They did the dunk. I saw the dunk.
Yeah, he dunked it. The basket, the ball, yeah.
And in fact, here's the ticket stubs.
Yeah.
Which is, when Brad Pitt comes up. You know, he gets slipped that letter. I'm assuming, we don't know what the letter says, but I'm assuming it says, I have ticket stubs, ramp up to it. And, that, you know, I'm editorializing because I don't know what it says. Right. But I'm assuming, you know, you're a priest, you wouldn't lie, would you, Father? No, of course not. But nobody saw you buy the tickets. You don't have a receipt for the tickets. You paid in cash, anything. Why should I believe you? And he's like, because I have 3 ticket stubs right here. And Brad Pitt does, you can tell it's like early Pitt because he's not completely dialed in with his Pittness. So he's got like the goofy, like, whoa, eyes when he like looks at the date of on the tickets. But he's also, I also know that he is trying to like sell it. So like part of me takes like the weird overacting as like, it's very meta, you know?
I'll get to that when we get to our own reviews.
Okay. I got nothing else, Your Honor. Gosh darn, this blew up in my face. You know, kind of
nuts.
the state rests.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious.
You know, and then we immediately cut to, you know, the jury finds the defendants not guilty on all charges. cut to outside of the courtroom where Jason Patrick sees Brad Pitt in very poor taste buy a hot dog from a street vendor. I feel like he would never do that ever again.
I hate hot dogs.
Maybe he paid double.
He did. You see him like throw the hot dog away like almost immediately.
I'm like, oh, that's
what the fuck did I buy this?
You know, he tells Shakes, he was like, you know, I'm putting in my 2-week notice, which they'll be fine with because I just screwed up a slam dunk open and shut case. You know, Jason Patrick tells him, oh, you know, you can always, you know, there's always bad guys out there. You know, you can public defendant. There's more money in it. And he goes, no. And, you know, he kind of lets us know that this was the only reason why he became a lawyer, you know, was to take down these four guys and have, you know, the eye of, you know, the eye of just sweet lady justice, look at Wilkinson's detention center to maybe possibly weed out any more of this. You know, he kind of has his Thanos moment where he's just like looking at the sunset and he's like, now I can rest. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We cut to, it's about 2 months later. We're trying to have a happy ending. It's the four boys and Carol at the bar, you know, hooping and hollering, getting drunk, you know, having one last good drunk. Come on, Michael.
Oh, beautiful.
One more song.
I woke up this morning singing that song, by the way.
Oh, how you try to cut me down to science. I don't think we can sing anymore. We're going to get flagged. you know, while they're having this happy moment with the music playing, that's when we get the narration that John was found dead at the age of 29. His swollen body was laying next to a bottle of gin, you know, died of, they never said whether it was alcohol or drugs, but he, you know, succumbed to some sort of thing like that. Tommy, at the age of 29, was shot like 6 times by a rival gang, found dead. Michael, Brad Pitt, you know, never returned to law, you know, just kind of became a carpenter and, you know, he's kind of doing his own thing. And then we never find out what goes on with Jason Patrick because it's the narrator talking, you know, but then we get the montage scene of like the boys carrying, you know, Brad Renfro holding a trophy. It was like a scene we never saw in the movie.
Yeah, didn't make sense.
It was like trying to be like very triumphant, you know, and then he hits us with the last lines of the movie, you know, the future lay sparkling ahead and we thought we'd known each other forever. And it just kind of, I just got goosebumps saying that. Like, it's just, you know, just kind of like, you know, we thought we'd be friends forever. And we just completely lost all our innocence. And just it's kind of left with a fuck me, you know, at the end.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's not like a whole lot of the almost like every 9 things of trivia was about the book actually not being a true story kind of thing. That even, I guess, if you bought this movie on VHS, it would say at the very end, because it was supposed to be, at the time of the VHS, it was considered a true story. They even say at the beginning, this is a true story of friendship. That at the end of the VHS, it would say, no criminal records were ever found. You know, essentially just like covering our ass. It's just a movie. the guy who wrote the book says it's true. We don't necessarily think it is. Don't sue us. You know, all names and, you know, no pets were harmed. All names and places were changed. Anything that may sound like this is entirely coincidental, that kind of thing. But the DVD didn't have that, so I thought that was interesting that for whatever reason the VHS.
My version did.
Yeah, oh, did it?
This streaming. I rented it on Google, but.
Oh, so did I.
I weirdly own. Maybe I own this movie.
Oh.
I kind of told like a story when you chose this movie, you know, over a year ago when we made these, when we made the choices, I'd never heard of this film and I was helping my dad move out of his, townhome at the time. And we were moving a couch from upstairs to downstairs and he was at the bottom. And he made a joke. He was like, "Don't drop this couch, because if you drop this couch, it's going to go down the stairs and it's going to crush me, and you're going to get sent to juvie. And Kevin, and you better and you better hope Kevin Bacon's not your god," like that kind of thing. I was like, "What?
Oh my god!"
I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "Oh, you've never seen Sleepers?" I was like, "No, what is this?" And that's when I went, you know, to the Holy of Holies. I went to Hastings, R.I.P.
R.I.P.
And you know, it was
dang.
It was one of those buy one get one for a dollar. It was used.
Dang.
So I own a used copy of Sleepers, and I watched it, and I was like, "Oh my god!" There's probably
my dad.
There's probably no way I'll ever watch this ever again. 12 years. Psych. 12 years later, here I am talking.
Along
about
came
it.
Michael.
So Brandon, you kind of you're edging me here. I got to hear what's your opinions. You seem a little. You know, obviously, this isn't like a triumphant film.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with the story. I thought the story was good.
Yeah.
Good, you know, story of redemption. It kind of fell flat for me. Like, I know this holds personal, you know, touch for Michael. Grew up watching this movie so many times or whatever.
I watched it like twice.
Every Christmas.
Yeah,
you said like 29 times, dude. So I was like, man,
what?
This is
what?
Let's. Where's Jacob? Roll back the tape. Let's
well, I
check
watched
that.
29 times.
It's my favorite
so no,
movie.
Anyways, my name's Michael. back to what I was going to say. I feel like this movie probably hit a home run back in the 90s, which is why I was a little disappointed that I didn't see it back then or slightly after. But I feel like we've been spoiled, you know, with great acting, Brad Pitt, Robert De Niro. And now to go back and watch something when they're like all
which,
younger, I was like, man.
Which is what you
it's
were saying.
Fell flat.
When, because you were asking, oh, what year did this? You wanted to look up a little bit, and you saw that cast list, and you're like, this
yeah,
is
I was like,
loaded.
Damn,
cast.
This is good. I showed my wife the cast list, and she was like, oh, I'm on board. Let's watch it.
Also, Jason Patrick is in it.
Yeah,
Jason Patrick.
So
Billy Crudup's first film.
Yes.
Good. I feel like it. You know, I think it could have been a lot better. It was very choppy at points too. And then there was, like you said, there was just scenes that were thrown in there that you're like, wait, what was that about? Or like a storyline that intersected, like the Little Caesar, Wendell. Yeah. Wendell Pierce. I was like, who the fuck is this guy? Why is he in here now? You know?
Yeah.
So I thought the story was good, and I felt like they did a good job of adapting it into a movie, like being a story. I've never read the book, but I just feel like the acting was fell a little flat.
It definitely did. Knowing it's a book, you can definitely tell. Like it felt very chaptery, you know, and maybe that's why I thought that. Because, like I said at the top, I thought it started with them killing Kevin Bacon, these two guys that you don't know. And then you go back to 1968. I don't know why I thought that. I just, for whatever reason in my brain, I didn't realize that was an hour into the film. Maybe I just don't remember the first hour being an hour long. I felt like they got right there to the detention center within 15 minutes, and then they were out within 15. But I was wrong.
No, they take you through the whole, you know, year to 18 months with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this watch around, obviously it had been probably a good 20 years since I've seen it. I forgot how, like, not complex, but how many moving parts with the trial scene was. I thought that was... There are some parts that you're just like, oh, wait. Well, oh, okay, yeah, though he slipped him the note with the ticket stubs, like stuff like that.
Yeah,
I forgot how complex that was.
I have like 6 pages of notes, and like a good 4 to 5 are just the trial because there's so much going on, and I didn't want to like leave anything out. So I felt like there were times when we were talking about it where I just went for 15 minutes just rambling. Because I was like, well, there's, and then this happened, this happened, this happened, and then, you know, because of this, this is going on. Like, so it's definitely not like a normal, like the second half of a Law and Order, you know, where,
Yeah.
but
Dong dong.
yeah.
Heavy stuff.
Good
I actually
times.
watched it the day, the last Saturday, right after the night after we recorded our last episode.
No. Did you watch it with Emma?
So, no, I watched it alone in the office upstairs with my headphones on.
Brandon, did
In the
you watch? She's like,
dark.
"What are you watching?" Did you watch it with Dom? Since she said that she was down to clown, yeah. I watched it with Cassie also. As I was putting
Damn,
it
I.
in, I was like, it's gonna get real
Ooh, it's
dark.
heavy.
You don't see anything. It's all implied. But it was it's
But
intense
it
for
is it,
those,
it yeah,
yeah.
it's intense and graphic in nature.
It just made me angry too. There was a point
Yeah,
of this
for
movie where I
sure.
was just angry.
Yeah.
Any of these type of movies make me pretty angry after watching, or you know, any books. I gotta take a breather.
Especially the end when you don't really get full closure. You know that like the guards are like, you know, getting exposed, but you're not like, what happened, you know? So it's
Because
like
like who
there's a little bit of
wins? Like,
redemption.
and who wins in the end, right? Like nobody.
Nobody.
Do you get your
That's what they literally said. Like after that night, like John and Tommy went back to the West Side Boys. Like they continued being gangbangers. You know, like they had their they were able to close that chapter of their life, but it still made them who they are. Like it.
Yeah, nothing changes really. It's like some people die, the guards get exposed, and then you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, feel ya. A
anything
breather.
else we want to touch on before we put this baby to sleep?
Lot of baby faces in the movie, though.
Oh, yeah. Well,
A lot of baby
it's
faces.
almost a 30-year-old
Lots of
movie.
baby. Damn.
Think about that.
I thinking.
Want to talk about what we're doing next time?
Yes,
Yeah, let's
Please.
do it.
We are traveling to the ripe old year of 2000 for it's a my pick. We're back to me. All of us have chosen one, so that's nice. We've had a little variety. We're gonna do our first of two Christopher Nolan films in 2000. We are I'm gonna get a tattoo to remind me to watch Memento. Michael, have you seen Memento?
Let me jog my memory real quick. I don't think
Have you seen season
so.
three of Blue Mountain State where Thad Castle gets a concussion?
Yes, I have.
That is what that episode is parodying. I love this movie. It's a top fiver for me. This is in the
Ooh.
top five club for me. I'm excited to watch it. It's a real trip.
Oh, it's on Peacock too.
Peacock?
Nice.
Really?
Good thing we
Peacock.
all re-signed up. Way to go, corporate America.
Oh, it's spelled Memento. Oh, I'm already interested. Like a memory.
Oh, it's very memory. Don't watch this drunk.
Oh, all right.
Sorry. So we'll be back next time with Memento. What do you say we go ahead and cut print check the gate?
See you guys.
Peace.